The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 591, recorded on October 20th, 2020.
Welcome to the 591st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 424th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Yep. So, we usually talk about what we've been playing first before we go into the gaming flashback, I think. So, I've been playing nothing really. I did get, here's the thing, I was going into Complete Strategist, which is a board game store that's on 33rd Street, you know, it's been around forever, and I usually just go in to browse, and staring me in the face was a copy of Nemesis, and Nemesis told me, you know, you better buy me, because someone else is going to buy me, and you'll lose a chance to buy me. It's very hard to find out in the wild, so I plunked down the $150 plus tax and carried it home. So if you don't know what Nemesis is, it's one of those games with a lot of miniatures, but it's Alien in everything but name. Well, Aliens. So it's 1 to 5 players, and each of you has a specific skill, like you're either a captain or an engineer or whatever, and you have your own action cards which give you special abilities that, you know, and general abilities. You hold 5 of them, and basically you're wandering through this spaceship where you find, uh-oh, there's an alien on board, and the classic alien style, you know, facehugger, alien, queen, that sort of thing. So, what you have to do is you have to either... There's a lot of ways you can win and a lot of ways you can lose. You know, like, you want to get the ship back to Earth and kill all the aliens and get into the hibernation pod. If you're outside of the hibernation pod when the ship goes to warp, you die. Or you can get an escape ship and the ship will blow up. And, of course, if you're on the ship when it blows up, you die. But here's the tricky part. You have your own goals. And often, they're not the goals that your teammates have, and you have to keep them to yourself. For example, my goal may be, I need to kill player 3. If I don't kill player 3, then I don't win. And oh, by the way, it doesn't say only player 3. So I could be a right bastard, set up the entire ship to blow up, get in the escape pod, and whiz away just as it blows up. Hey, guess what? I won because player 3 died. Oh, well, player 1, 2, and 5 also died, but I don't care. I won.
That's a real cutthroat-sounding game.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Not everything is like... I may have a goal like, I want to research this part of the alien, and once I research that part, I win, if I can live. I could have it so that I have the ship blast off into deep space. it's an old ship, so the engines have to be repaired and all that stuff. And, oh, by the way, it's entirely possible that you'll accidentally set the ship to self-destruct, and it gets to a point in which you cannot stop it from self-destructing, so you have to change your plans really quickly. So, yeah. A lot of people love it because the miniatures are terrific, but I just love it because I'm a big fan of the hidden role trader mechanic. And as I said, it's an incredibly hard game to find. They recently had a Kickstarter for the expansion, which I did not take a part of. But one of the good things is every time these companies do a Kickstarter for an expansion, they usually include an option, well, you can also get these previous things. So I'm just going to be patient and wait for the next Kickstarter expansion, and I'll just select the stuff that I don't have. So, but yeah, I just got Well, here's the other thing. Games I will be playing. So I received a Kickstarter Machine for Pig. I mean, I just received Amnesia, a Machine for Pigs, and Amnesia Rebirth review copies. So I'll be playing those. And, oh, yeah, something else is coming out this week, and I forgot what it is. Oh, yeah, I was also playing some Age of Empire 3, and I realized doing a 2-on-2 solo is not that fun. So I'm going to be, when I start playing it again, I'm going to be doing 1v1. And it's basically Age of Empires, it's just that you have a home section now. And that inspired me to rebuy Colonization, a game that I owned, I can't find anywhere, so I just got it on Steam. And for those who don't know, there are two Colonizations, and I have both of them. One is the original 1995 game, the other is Civilization IV Colonization. And both of them, as you might guess, is basically Civilization, except it takes place during the Revolutionary War. And basically, the goal of that is to, A, get your colony to survive, and then, B, at some point, rebel against your home country. Which is incredibly difficult, because the home country sends massive, massive units that you have to fight off. Hmm. So, Scott, have you played Colonization?
No, I have not, but I've heard of it, read about it. I just haven't played it.
I prefer the old version of the game. The only problem with the old version of the game is it's when my computer mouses were strange, exotic things, and it didn't quite know how to use them. So it's a weird combination of having to use the keyboard and sometimes the mouse, even though you don't need to use the mouse. Civilization IV Colonization is okay.
I don't think I want to remember the era of not being able to use a mouse. That's a very long time
ago. You can use a mouse. It's just that they didn't quite know how to use them. Like now, if say you're playing Civilization, right? Civilization VI. You want to move a unit, you just right-click to where you want it to go. Now, you couldn't do that in I think you had to hold down the left mouse button to make it go someplace. And you had to use the keyboard to scroll the map. There's just a lot of annoying things about the 1995 version. The most annoying thing is that it uses DOSBox, so I can't even stream it, because it's impossible to stream those games without doing a full... It's a pain in the butt to stream DOSBox games. Hmm. But yeah, and I also received in Gamefly PGA Tour 2K21. And from all the reviews I've read, it's not a game I want to own, but it is a game I want to try out. Yeah. TJ, what's coming up? Because I know there's a game that I'm going to be playing and I forgot all about.
Let me pull up our list here.
Oh, by the way, on the 30th, on the 29th actually, the Tim Schafer Adventure Games Remastered are hitting Xbox and Game Pass. So you'll have Full Throttle, Day of the Tentacle, and Grim Fandango, all remastered versions, finally on the Xbox. They were released previously on PC and PS4. But, of course, since Microsoft owns Double Fine now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, what have you been playing, Scott?
Oh, I've been playing... Do you want me to still tell you what's coming up on this?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, TJ.
I was going to say, because did you still want to know what games are coming up?
Yeah, I mean, like there is something. You know what's actually coming up? November 10th, the new consoles are coming up. I was going to say, 3 weeks from now. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, 3 weeks from now. No, 2 weeks from now. It's like, oh my god, they're almost here.
Watchdog Legions is coming up on October 29th.
Right, that was the game I was thinking of. Yeah, Watchdog Legions is coming out. I definitely want to check that out.
And then Pikmin 3 Deluxe. I don't know if you care about that. But the Dark Pictures Anthology Little Hope is also coming out on Halloween.
Yeah, you know what's strange about that game? It's only $30.
Well, the ones that they've done since Until Dawn aren't really full-length games, I would say.
And, no, but Madame Adan was still full price.
Was it? I couldn't remember.
I never bought it, but I remember it being full price. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm willing to bet you anything that that's going to be a Game Pass game.
Yeah,
Madame Adan is a Game Pass game, so I'm pretty willing to bet. I am looking forward to Little Hope. I'm ambivalent about the story of Madame Adan. Yeah, green gas that makes you hallucinate. Whoop-de-doo. At least Little Hope is going to be about the Salem witches.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. It looks pretty crazy.
Austin Waiting Hope 4 on November 6th. Paw Patrol, Mighty Pup Save Adventure Boy.
I do see that The Legend of Heroes Trials of Cold Steel 4 is coming out on October 27th. And that just reminds me how I have to finish up Cold Steel 1, play the Crossbell duology games, and then play Cold Steel 2 and 3. So it's quite a lot to get to the part 4.
You're such a slacker.
There's so much to do. It's an RPG, though. There's so much to play.
Yeah.
Then cheat.
Cheat? I'm not going to cheat. What's this about cheating?
I've also put Baldur's Gate 3 on a moratorium. I'm going to wait for the next big update before I play again. Which is fine. I mean, I knew what I was getting into. It's early access, so.
Yeah, sure. I've heard it's like extremely early access stuff.
I will say this, though. It's promising.
Mm-hmm.
It's promising. So I can tell whatever it ends up being in the end, it's going to be very, very good. But like I said, Scott, just wait on it. You don't need to get
it
right now.
Oh, my God. November.
There's a lot of games I'm waiting on.
So good.
Yeah.
I already have two Kickstarter games that I'm going to have to wait 2 years for them to come out.
Computer games?
Yeah, computer games.
Okay. I don't Kickstart computer games. I just do board games.
That's fine. It has to be a very certain kind of game, and for me, it's like
we all know that one Kickstarter game that you're really looking forward to.
Well, there's Ayudin Chronicles, and then also Sea of Stars.
The Ayudin Chronicles are the one that you're really looking forward to.
Yeah,
everybody's looking forward to that one. I know that one
went crazy. But again, so 2 years, so 2022 looks very promising for two really good games. So those will be the games of the year of that year if they both come out that year.
Fortunately, the two of the projects that I'm waiting on are coming soon. One of them is Good Cop, Bad Cop Promoted, which I'm looking forward to. The annoying thing about the Avalon Deluxe. The annoying part about it, though, is that these are board games, so you know you have to have a group of people to play. And oh, gee, I wonder what I cannot do right now. Yeah, we can't go to a restaurant and get around and play these games yet. And I've been holding on to Tiny Epic Dinosaurs. You know, I mean, a lot of these games are single player, but that's no fun.
So the games I've been playing, I've been playing two games. One was a free release from Sega, Night into Dreams, that was on the Sega Dreamcast, and I played that, and it is the most trippy, weirdest, I guess, platforming flying game.
I don't know if you consider it a platform game, but I will say this: I would like it more if it wasn't confusing to play.
Yeah, it's very confusing. I have no idea what I am or what I'm doing. I seem to be some sort of jester, and
You're a flying fairy jester thingy, and
yeah, and
a lot
I'm collecting
of people,
baubles.
A lot of people have a lot of nostalgia for that game.
Yeah,
once it was announced,
really
I was like, "Holy shit, it's Knights! Woo!" Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, "Okay."
It's all right, I guess. I mean, it's just very weird, and the game doesn't explain itself at all, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah, remember, it was a Dreamcast game, which probably means it had a manual?
Yeah, it probably did. You're right. I forgot.
It had a manual, and it would tell you what to do, although there should be an online manual somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Usually, Steam does have these things there. The manual will be a PDF tucked away in the properties folder.
Oh, I should mention, by the way, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is free on Steam. And the reason for that is that it's a part of the Sega bundle. So I think it's just basically, hey, try Sonic the Hedgehog 2 if you like it. You can have more just like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, give them a little taste and then see if they buy more. And the other game I've been playing is Epic's giveaway. They gave away Amnesia, but they also gave away Kingdoms, New Lands. I wanted to try that out.
Yeah, that's been on Game Pass, but I also got it on Epic as well. Kingdoms, the Kingdoms games are at once fun and frustrating.
Yes, it's like a survival game. You're
building a castle, but
yeah, but it's like very slow, a little bit at a time, and you have to figure. Again, doesn't really explain itself too much. It's kind of intuitive, I guess, but it's a little bit confusing because I'm not sure what the things were, what was happening. The days were passing. There's a night and day cycle, and you're collecting coins from the villagers, and you have
gems.
To hire
you have to get
more
gems
villagers
because that helps you advance. Yeah, basically, it's one of those scale games in which you need this to build this, now you need this to build this, now you need this to build this, you know, you need this to build this. It can get frustrating.
Especially when you get attacked and then you don't have enough forces to fight them and they kill you and then you have to start all over again.
It's sort of like Crusader Kings 3. You just start again as one of your heirs, and each of your heirs, if I remember correctly, has a power or an ability.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. It's a simple game. People love it. I'm ambivalent about it. But
yeah, I feel kind of the same. But go ahead. Sorry.
One of the games that's on Game Pass is I don't know if it's on. Wait, no, it's not on Game Pass. But one of the games that's on sale is Kingmaker, and at some point I'm just gonna have to play that. Pathfinder Kingmaker. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, that is a good game. I thought you said you had been playing it.
No, I had. No, I've been playing. I've been playing the game that you're describing.
Oh, okay.
I haven't. I have the. I think it's on Game Pass. I just haven't played it.
Okay.
I think it's on the Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah, you told me there was a certain quest I had to make sure to win, otherwise I lose. I guess that's
I already know about that quest in which. Okay. Yeah, Pathfinder Kingmaker. I already know that there is a timed quest that you don't know is a timed quest. They don't tell you it's a timed quest until they say, "Oh, by the way, you lost." What?
Oh,
because you didn't do this one quest. Oh.
Yeah,
so I'm glad I know about that ahead of time.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they won't tell you that it's a critical mission, and if you don't do it, you'll die. The game will end.
Jeez.
I mean, they say, well, it's kind of important. They just don't tell you how important.
Oh, I see. One of those hidden things. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to be careful and try to get all my quests done in a timely manner.
But after that, you know, from what I understand, you know, the best part of the game is just creating your character.
Because
right. It's like Baldur's Gate 3. It has a very deep. Well, it has more things. I saw some of the mods at Nexus. Like one of them gives you the voice of Tony Todd. I mean, not Tony Todd. Of the other one. From
James Earl Jones. Morgan
from
Freeman?
Crackdown 3. TJ, you know his name.
Wait, hold on. Oh my god. This drew a complete blank. Crackdown 3.
You know.
Where is he? I know his face, I just don't know his name.
Terry
Crews. That's driving me.
Terry Crews. But here's the thing, one of them actually gives you the option to give your main character Terry Crews is his face, and he has voice lines, and it's funny. What's called one of them said, well, the comments in the Nexus mod said, if you use him, the enemies will just give up upon seeing him.
There's a fancy art somebody did of Terry Crews in paladin armor. So when your charisma is a natural 18, and there's a picture of Terry Crews in a paladin.
And you can make him Commander Shepard. You know, there's a crap ton of mods for that game. More so than a lot of other games. Anyways, DJ, what have you been playing? Amnesia, don't tell us.
Well, then, Zip Lips.
Okay, but you have been playing it?
Yes.
Okay. The new one, Amnesia Rebirth?
Mm-hmm. I reviewed it, and I beat the game.
Okay. So without giving up any spoilers, how was it?
I say this with no small amount of like stock. I love the game I'm about to compare it to. I think it's better than Resident Evil 3 remake. I think
that's
it's
good.
I think it might be my favorite horror game of 2020.
How many horror games of 2020 have there been, actually? Now that I think about it. Well, I'm glad you liked it more than Resident Evil 3, because a lot of people didn't like Resident Evil 3.
I think Resident Evil 3 Remake was quite good, but yeah, I also...
That's not a universal opinion, though.
But I think... And I mean, I've gone to... You've heard me go to bat defending Resident Evil 3. I think the pacing is great. I think it does what it came to do and then finishes up and it gets out. But like a lot of people's issue with it is that it isn't longer, or that there's not a lot of extras, and whatever.
Here's the thing: when you go to a movie, it's only you're paying whatever amount of money for 2 hours, you know, and it's how it feels. You know, there's some games which just take too long, and it's sort of like a slug to get through.
That's how I feel about Resident Evil 3. I feel like it paces itself properly, makes its point, finishes up, and leaves. That said, I feel like Amnesia Rebirth is better. I feel like one of the best horror games I've played in a while. It's got a very good story. It's compelling.
Does it have the same thing as Silent Hill, in which it's something that your main character is paying for?
I would say
it's not a self-inflicted hell.
No. Well, I don't like, that's a hard question to answer.
Let me ask you a question. Does it take place in the 19th century like the other games?
Yes, it does. Well, no, like the 1800s. No,
when does it take place?
It takes place in 19th. And this is like not even.
Oh, it takes place in the 1950s.
It takes place in 1937.
Oh, okay. So, but here, for those who don't know, the first two games took place in the 1800s, I believe, in England or something like that. Or am I wrong? Like, I think the Dark Descent took place in what, like 1887, or was it something like 1903?
It was something like 18 something.
Okay. Because a lot of the horror of that game, from what I understand, 1839, and he's in Prussian Brandenburg Castle. Got it. Because a lot of it comes from that aesthetic of the early 19th century. Yeah. So here's the thing. The first game took place in 1839. A Machine for Pigs takes place in 1899.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like they're coming up on the calendar. Who knows? Maybe the next Amnesia game will take place in the 70s. God, that'll be frightening.
It was good though. I really liked the story. I won't give anything away about it. It's a good roller coaster. It has a good pace to it. It has a good tension to it. It also has some good motivations to it, which that will make more sense when you play it. But
is it on the level of Soma?
I would say I would say it's better than Soma.
Okay. You don't know, Soma is the one game Frictional made that wasn't Amnesia and wasn't Penumbra.
Mm-hmm. But, that's all I'll say on Amnesia Rebirth. I really do feel like this is a game that people should explore and see for themselves. It's a good one.
Have you ever played Penumbra?
I have not.
Okay. Because Frictional Games, before they started doing Amnesia, for those who don't know, Penumbra was a trilogy that they did before it, which is also a first-person adventure survival / psychological horror. And it was basically a very physics engine based game too. So
yes, and I would say that Amnesia Rebirth does the tricks that fans might have come to expect from Amnesia games, but I think it does them better, and I think it is like a meaningful evolution of what Frictional has been doing for years.
Okay. I still want to play Soma.
Yeah, Soma's pretty good too.
That is because I keep on hearing about what the game is really about and what's going on with the main character, but I always try to avoid, you know, finding out what it is before I actually play it. So I just want to play Soma so I can get it. It's sort of like with Inside. I kept on hearing about the ending of Inside and how wacky it is and all the, you know, how weird and strange it was. I had to avoid I had to play Inside just so I could find out what the hell they were talking about, just so I could stop feeling like, okay, whatever, not knowing what they were talking about. Soma is that kind of game. I don't think the stories of The Dark Descent or Machine for Pigs are as, you know, have that effect on me. Like, I need to know it's good. No, I just know it's scary. I just know that things go booga 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 in the night, and it does a very good job of maintaining tension. You know, Hitchcockian tension, that is, you know, where you know there's something there, and you're waiting for it to happen, and it's not happening, and a lot of the scariness is waiting for the other foot to drop, for the other shoe to drop. I'm pretty sure that's what Rebirth is like, right? Where it just maintains that level of tension, and you're just waiting for something bad to happen, and it's like teasing, it's like, no, maybe something bad might happen, but who knows? Oh, there's a noise over there. You want to check it out?
They did a good job of a cinematic experience and like the way it feels to move around in Amnesia Rebirth too. It feels like,
yeah,
it feels natural, and I like that. And not like head shaking weird things. Like, that stuff makes me nauseous, and you know, there are options to either increase or turn that down, which I appreciate, because I played Serious Sam 4 recently, and there was so much head bobbing in that game that it made me violently ill like about 30 minutes in.
Here's the thing, do you think you could ever play an Amnesia game in VR?
I could.
You could?
To a degree. Because those games, and this is like going back to the very beginning, Amnesia games are very big on jump scares and monsters getting on your face.
Okay.
And that would – I would have to be sitting down because I would be nervous about like jumping so hard I fall over or something.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I did not like Five Nights at Freddy's. Because jump scares are not not scary; they're startling. You know, I prefer games that, you know, fear was scary. I never played Fear 2 or 3. I only played the first one, but it was scary because it wasn't jump scares. It was more like it limits your movement at times, and the fact that it's limiting what you can do is sort of adding to the fear. You know, and the jump scares are earned. They're not just like, boo. That's not scary. It's just nerve-wracking. And that's not the same thing as being scared. One game that I've never played, which I heard is able to ramp up the scariness from the mundane, is Condemned. And at some point, I'll play Condemned.
Yeah. Amnesia is also very good. Like, despite what I said about the jump scares, they don't rely on those.
No, it sounds like the jump scares in the Amnesia games are earned.
Mm-hmm. They do a good job of building dread before, like, they don't, like, there is the occasional, like, oh god, like, sudden flash in your face, but for the most part, it's not like Five Nights at Freddy's. They really do a good job of, like, building intense dread of the situation.
Have you ever seen the movie Jacob's Ladder?
Yes.
Okay, so basically that's what Jacob's Ladder is. It is one of those films in which the entire film, I'm filled with dread, and there's only two jump scares in the entire film, but they're memorable. One is at the conclusion of that dance. You'll know what I'm talking about if you ever watch the film. And the other is when he pushes the mirror to look, because he sees his son in the mirror and he pushes it to look for to see him. Those are the only two jump scares in the entire film, But they're still frightening. I mean, the rest of the film is scary as hell, even though it's a slow burn. You know? So, yeah. By the way, did you know that Jacob's Ladder was the primary inspiration for the first Silent Hill?
Yeah, that's half the reason I watched it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I played Silent Hill before I saw Jacob's Ladder, and so once I learned that, I wanted to go back and see what it was about.
Yeah. I just wish at some point they'd do a director's cut and put back three of the scenes that they have, deleted scenes that they have on the DVD, because they really add a lot to the movie. And the reason Adrian Lyne took them out is because he said that by the time they got to the end, the audience was exhausted. And I'm thinking, fuck you. I don't care if they're exhausted. It adds to the story, damn it. Macaulay Culkin's greatest film, and he was never credited in it. He plays Gabe. He plays his young blonde son, who carries him up the stairs at the end. That's Macaulay Culkin. Anyways. There was something I was going to say now, and now I completely forgot it. Oh, yes. I forgot. Another game that came out last week was Jackbox Party Pack 7, which I did twice in Twitch stream parties. And so far, the game that seems to be the one that everybody loves is Blather Round, in which you're given something, a person, place, or thing, say Jurassic Park, Macaulay Culkin, Lake Titicaca, whatever, and you can only describe it with the descriptions that the game gives you, and you have to keep on giving descriptions, and people are trying to guess it. It's really fun. The other games are fine, but I think Blather Round is the game of choice for that game. Anyways, can we move on to Game Flashback? You still had another game you were going to talk about, right, TJ?
No, we're fine. Okay. We can move on.
So, TJ, Gaming Flashback.
Sure. Gaming Flashback, The Legend of Zelda, Twilight Princess. The Legend of Zelda, Twilight Princess, was an action-adventure game developed and published by Nintendo for the GameCube and Wii Home video game systems. It was the 13th installment of the series. The Legend of Zelda, It was the 13th installment of the series, Legend of Zelda. Originally planned for release exclusively on the GameCube in November 2005, Twilight Princess was delayed by Nintendo to allow its developers to refine the game, add more content, and port it to the Wii. The Wii version was a launch game in North America in November 2006 and in Japan, Europe, and Australia the following month. The GameCube version was also released worldwide in December 2006 and was the final first-party game released for the console. The game begins with a youth named Link, who works as a ranch hand in Ordon Village. One day, Bulblins take away the village's children. Link pursues and encounters a wall of twilight. A shadow beast pulls him beyond the wall into the twilight-shrouded forest, where he is transformed into a wolf and imprisoned. Link is soon freed by a twilight creature named Midna, who offers to help him if he obeys her unconditionally. She guides him to Princess Zelda, who explains that Zant, the king of the Twilly, invaded Hyrule Castle and forced her to surrender. The king became enveloped in twilight, turning all of its inhabitants besides Link and Zelda into spirits. Twilight Princess was released to critical acclaim and commercial success. It received perfect scores from major publications such as 1UP.com, Computer and Video Games, Electronic Gaming Monthly, Game Informer, Games Radar, and GameSpy. A few years later, the game would start getting a fan and critical backlash, with such articles as Why Twilight Princess is Overrated and Twilight Princess is the Third Worst Zelda Game, citing its hand-holding and overall boring dungeons and thin plot.
You know, here's the thing. A lot of people, and I think Paul would agree, he's the Zelda fan, that I think Twilight Princess started at a trend in Zelda games that did not end until Breath of the Wild, and that was the treating of the player like they'd never seen a controller before in their life. And they'd never seen a console before in their life. The hand-holding was so ingrained. Hey, did you know if you press A, you could attack? You don't? Well, let me remind you 15 more times.
I remember getting this game, and I don't remember it. I don't feel like I mean, my memory of it, I don't feel that I was badgered as much, but I never minded Navi or the little fairy helpers. But I know in Breath of the Wild, you don't get that.
When it was supposed to come up, it wasn't taking into account for the Wiimote.
Yeah.
There was no Wiimote on the GameCube, but they said, you know, we're going to make this a launch title for the Wii. So they added all these Wiimote, actions.
Yeah, like the sumo wrestling.
Yeah, like people liked it at first because the Wiimote was fresh and exciting, but after a while, it's like, ugh, do I really have to?
Yeah, wanted to get back to just having a nice controller in your hand, and so that, yeah, I didn't really like the sumo wrestling aspect. I had a hard time with it, but I remember enjoying the game.
Oh, people enjoyed it when it was first out, but here's the thing. When people started comparing it to other Zelda games before that, it's sort of like people started, it started curdling to them. It's sort of like, you know, this isn't as good as I remember. Because, you know, when you get a new game that's a launch game for your computer, for your title, it's sort of like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm going to tell you something. Mario 64 sucked. I will say that, and I will say it unabashedly. It sucked, Mario 64. Banjo-Kazooie did it right. Mario 64, and I will say yes, Mario 64 was trying something new, but the controls of Mario 64 has not held up well, you know.
Well, as you like to say, let's not bury the lead. I want to focus on Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I know.
I remember one of the lines that TJ said was boring dungeons, and I think that is that's not
TJ
accurate.
Didn't say it.
I'm sorry, TJ quoted. I'm sorry, TJ's quote of the article.
Yeah, all of this, by the way, was TJ's opinion, right, TJ? Everything.
No, I'm sorry, I did not mean to imply that was TJ's opinion. I'm just saying, okay, there's a dungeon in Twilight Princess that's basically a huge manor that's been run down and invaded by monsters, and it's kind of unique because it's a manor and it feels like a manor, and you're going through rooms trying to unlock various doors and figure out how to progress and find the secrets. And I thought it was very interesting and a cool dungeon and kind of unique. And I don't know. I really enjoyed Twilight Princess, and I thought it was something different. You know, you could turn into a dog and you're chasing down scents. And I guess some people didn't like that mechanic, but it was a different mechanic, a new one that they experimented with. And it was a very dark game, too, very dark colors. You know, when you look at Breath of the Wild, it's a lot more colorful. So that might be a difference of why they like Breath of the Wild more. And, yeah, Skyward Sword was very bright compared to that, too. So I don't know.
It's just like Twilight Princess is such a bad reputation now. People say, here's the thing, you know, but a lot of people have the attitude of, you know, it's bad for a Zelda game. It's okay as a game unto itself, but it's bad for a Zelda game. Which, okay, I guess.
And also the idea that this is the third worst Zelda, I don't think that's correct either, because there's like two CDI games that are really bad.
I think they're talking about the Nintendo release Zelda games. I don't think they're talking about the Excuse Me Princess.
Yeah, those. I don't even think that was on that one. But
no,
yeah,
that was a cartoon.
Yeah.
I won!
Yeah, that one.
I liked it when other...
You've killed me! Good!
You must die now.
Remember when Coleco owned the licensing rights to Donkey Kong.
But, So Twilight Princess was a response to angry Nintendo fans. Because Wind Waker was so bright and cheerful and happy and colorful that... Like, at the time, everybody was like, what is this? This is a Zelda. This is the Zelda that I wanted.
Now we know it was actually a predecessor to Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. That's basically what it was. Zelda Black Flag. That's what it was. I'm not kidding. It was Zelda Black Flag. Everything
I wish Paul was here.
Everything that was in Wind Waker, you can find in Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. Basic same mechanics. Except
it's
for the fact you're not
Waker,
assassinating anybody and you're not doing
You're not assassinating
before.
Anybody. You're not climbing on stuff. You have a magic wand that makes music. And a talking ship.
The main it's
exactly like Assassin's Creed. You're right. Exactly.
No, it's not exactly like Assassin's Creed. It's like Black Flag. the point is that your entire universe surrounds around your boat.
You're not giving money to a company that sexually harasses its employees
Don't make assumptions there, TJ.
Or changes the entire plot because girl.
Yeah.
But
I'm still looking forward to Watchdog Legions.
In the end, it's interesting though, because ultimately people would come to love Wind Waker and sort of come to sour on Twilight Princess.
I think the thing is that Twilight Princess was just very thin.
I think it actually takes a look at that dark world, because in Link Between the Worlds, you have that dark world and it's there, but it's just sort of there as this cliche, oh, this is the negative world. Whereas in Twilight Princess, you kind of explore it. You have Midna and she's part of that world and she's kind of telling you about it and what it's like to be there and that she's fighting for it just like you're fighting for Hyrule. And
so
that comes
Twilight
up.
Princess is like Silent Hill, then.
I guess. I was going to go
world.
On to Link Between Worlds, where that happens as well, where there's where it's Hilda, and she's fighting for Lothlórien, and she feels like it's a kingdom just as worthy as Hyrule to exist. And I think that's kind of a nice evolution of this, you know, because usually you have the good world and the bad world. The shadow world is full of evil, bad people. And now it's like, well, they who exist to be alive and stuff.
Oh. Your mic is cutting out a bit.
Sorry.
I don't think the Twilight Princess is actually the worst Zelda.
They didn't say it was the worst Zelda. They said it was the third worst.
I think the worst mechanically is probably Skyward Sword. And I think the worst story-wise is probably Spirit Tracks.
But here's the thing, you know, Skyward Sword is basically an extension of Twilight Princess in terms of gameplay and all that stuff. Like I said, people don't like Twilight Princess because it started as a trend that was finally broken by Breath of the Wild in Zelda games.
Are you talking about the hand-holding thing?
Not only that, but the gameplay mechanics as well.
The hand-holding thing began way before that. Like, I would
Ocarina.
Say that the hand... Yeah, I would say Ocarina
was,
is where
it was,
it's the most
But with Twilight
transparent.
Princess, it became very obvious. It was the first time it was, like, beat you over the head with it.
Let me tell you about Navi.
I do not want to watch Avatar.
Navi is the single worst fairy in all of Zelda.
Aww. Poor Navi, she's just trying to help.
She's way too loud and obnoxious about it.
Just
pushy.
Just name Link useless. So that Navi say, hey, useless.
Hey,
hey useless.
Listen.
Hey, useless, why don't you do this?
Oh.
I remember someone else made Link's name Fuck Me. And whoever the guide was this time just at certain point said, Fuck me, it's cold in here.
That's funny. Oh.
But yeah, like...
You can't do that anymore with Nintendo games. You can't give them any name you want.
Midna is way more tolerable than Navi. She basically does the same thing as Navi, but, like, it's not as annoying as Navi.
It's definitely interesting because it's like somebody that's trying to help you, but like they're annoyed with you, like visibly, like you're doing the wrong thing. Do this. Stop it. Go over there, you know. And whereas Navi is just this kind of robotic, insistent thing, and I think Fee was kind of the same. Fee was weird, you know. It's weird to have. You have this fantasy setting, and you have this basic robot here talking to you.
Here's
like
a question.
The probability
of which one was the one that basically told you what to do. Like, if there was sort of like a puzzle boss, before you could even figure anything out, it said, oh, do you know that if you do this, you'll kill him?
All of them.
Okay.
Every one of them does that. Fee, Midna, and Navi are guilty of that.
I mean,
I forget
on.
What the
you don't
fairy
have to
was.
Have Dark Souls, but let the player figure something out.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild did become the Dark Souls of the Zelda franchise after that, because you can get killed real easily in Breath of the Wild if you don't fight things the right way.
Yeah,
like
I would say it was more like Fallout New Vegas. If you went in one direction, that was not the direction you should be going in, then you'll get killed quickly.
Yeah.
Don't walk north!
Something will knock you off a cliff and your hearts will just explode into dust.
Yeah.
Or you run into one of those guardians for the first time and you don't know what's happening and it just explodes you with a laser beam.
I'm thinking about Fallout New Vegas, in which if you go north, look at this, here's a bug. Oh, it killed me in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the scorpions. Yeah, those rat scorpions, if you go north in Fallout New Vegas, it's like, guess what? There's a snack on the horizon, and guess what? It's you.
Giant rat scorpions.
Yeah. That's how you know you're going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Oh, there are giant rat scorpions over there. I guess I shouldn't be going that way.
And every one of them is way stronger than a pistol's bullets.
Anyways. But, you know, you have those speedrunners in Breath of the Wild who just manage to avoid that and just end the game in 30 minutes.
Yeah, they knock down a tree, use the kinetic thing, and then jump on the tree, and the tree launches them into Ganon's castle.
Yeah, they've had this series going on. I forgot which publication is doing it, but they showed the developers how speedrunners are beating their game and get their reactions. It's on YouTube. I haven't watched any of it, but I'm pretty sure that the developers would probably be shaking their heads.
Hmm. Yeah. Anyways, like, also,
I see this story about how this person beat a new game in 29 minutes, and it's like, really? Did you enjoy it?
I hope they did.
So, anyways, getting back to Twilight Princess, it wasn't the best game ever made, like one publication said at the time. You know, here's the thing about Nintendo games. If a Nintendo game is good, it'll be the best ever of anything. Just that happens. No other company has games that are like that, no matter how good or bad they are. It's like when they release a game, it's like, yeah, this is the best game ever! Super Mario Odyssey is the best game ever made, and there's no discussion about it. No, I'm sorry, Super Mario Galaxy, not Odyssey.
Oh. I thought Galaxy was good and
yeah,
different,
but it's not the best game ever made.
No, I wouldn't say best game ever made, but it was. I thought it was good.
It's the highest rated game ever on Metacritic, like with a 9.8.
If you ask the internet, the best game ever made is Mario Galaxy 2.
Really? Because it wasn't 2 wasn't even as good as 1.
No, I agree. Neither of them are like. I wouldn't say that either of them are like the crowning achievement of Mario, but...
Well, no, here's the thing. At least Super Mario Galaxy took Mario a next step instead of having all these new Super Mario Brothers platformers one after the other. At least it did something different. I think you say the same thing about Thousand Year Door, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I think out of all the Mario games, I actually believe that Super Mario Maker is probably the most prolific of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The whole new wave of making really brutal levels where you have to precisely move through them to beat them is just crazy now. And I know there's at least one streamer, Rubber Ninja Ross, who's doing a whole world of levels to torture Dan and Aaron with, I guess later this year or next year, whenever they get it to them, which is just insane that you can make your own story now with that Super Mario level 2 maker. You just make your own universe and have, I don't know, just your own story, whatever you want to do.
Let's move on. Now, before we get into the actual news, there's some news items which I'm not going to spend much time on. They're blips. Like, a couple of days ago, Phil Spencer said that Xbox could recoup all $7.5 billion on the ZeniMax purchase without putting any games whatsoever on the PlayStation. Which, probably made a lot of PlayStation owners kind of nervous.
I think people are misconstruing what he says, because I've read that article, too.
He said they could, but they're not.
Not that they would.
Yeah.
And he's not, and it makes it sound like he's, like it's some veiled threat, and it's not. It's just somebody asked him.
What are you talking about? It is a veiled threat, whether he wants it to be or not.
Jonah was asked straightforward, can you make the money back without porting to other systems? And he goes, yes, but that doesn't mean we're going to.
But that's just it. I'm not saying that he made a veiled threat, and I'm not saying he intended to make a veiled threat, but it ended up being one anyway. Because if you say, we don't need to put it on any other consoles, we may... Wink, wink.
They're going to. They like money.
It could have been a shot across the bow of Nintendo and Sony saying, hey, if you want to have Elder Scrolls 6, you know what? You can just put in Game Pass on your PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. It'll be on those consoles in one form or another, I'm sure, at some point.
I'm going to say something. You know, they don't even have to do a long console exclusivity. They could do it. A one-month console exclusivity and get the major edge, because people are impatient. They want it now. They don't want to be sitting around for a month watching other people posting their streams of Elder Scrolls 6. No, they want it right now. Whenever that comes out, by the way. We still 2023 maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure Avowed will come out before Elder Scrolls 6, and that'll be on all the platforms, I'm sure.
Well, Microsoft's not going to release Avowed and Elder Scrolls 6 in the same year.
Definitely not. That would be weird.
There was also an interesting story that Sony was in talks with Bethesda to make Starfield a limited-time exclusive on the PlayStation. Whatever it was going to be. And we still don't know what Starfield is going to be. All we know it's in space.
that's it. I mean, it could be anything.
It involves stars, and it involves a field.
You're looking at space and all these stars, and it's really just, we're just going to make a constellation maker. That's what this is. Connect the dots and make your own constellation.
Well, it turns out to be a Zelda-like game in which it starts out with the main character sleeping in a field with a sky of stars ahead of him. There's your Starfield.
Ah, man. So, yeah, it could be anything at this point.
What was that Zelda-like game that you pointed out to me, Scott?
Probably Genshin Impact, right?
No. It was a new one that was coming out.
The Phoenix Rising? Immortals Phoenix Rising?
No, it was the freebie. It was the free game. Genshin Impact.
Oh, yeah, that's Genshin Impact, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I wonder when Microsoft's going to make their own version of that. They can. By the way, when we were talking about Microsoft buying ZeniMax...
Isn't that Tunic? Isn't that a Zelda-like game?
It is.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I just remembered. Remember when we were talking about the ZeniMax acquisition of ZeniMax by Microsoft? One thing I don't think we discussed was that that's not all that Microsoft purchased when they purchased ZeniMax. They also purchased the Lithtech engine. And that is worth a lot. Because when you don't have to pay for... That's why... Electronic Arts went so batshit over using Frostbite for everything, you know? When you own an engine, there's a lot of money you're saving. Now, Microsoft hopefully is not going to make everything Lithtech, but the fact that they have Lithtech means they can make some kick-ass shooters. I mean, isn't Doom using the Lithtech engine? Or is it its own Doom engine? I think it's its own Doom engine.
Yeah, something like IdTech.
Yeah, I'm sorry, IdTech, whatever. Lithtech is the one that Monolith uses. I'm sorry. Lithtech was the thing that did Tron 2.0 and No One Lives Forever. I'm sorry. No, IdTech engine. By the way, they released the new DLC for Doom Eternal. And from what a lot of people are saying, it's actually more of an expansion than it is a DLC. I'm pretty sure you know all about it, TJ.
What was it?
The new DLC for Doom Eternal.
It's more of an expansion pack than
It's a standalone. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You don't actually have to have Doom Eternal to play the
Okay, but it's more than just, you know, it's almost a full game unto itself is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
It sounds like it is if it's standalone.
It picks up pretty much straight after Doom Eternal ends. So, like, it still continues the story for what it's worth, but you don't need Doom Eternal to play it. You can literally just buy it by itself and play it on its own.
But what's the point of that?
I don't know, but you can if you want to.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyway. Another news item that we're not going to really cover that much in depth is that Sony announced something interesting about the PlayStation 5, which is upsetting a lot of people, and that is that they don't know how hot the PlayStation 5 can run. And what they're going to be doing is they're going to be getting input from PlayStation 5s out in the wild, you know, purchased PlayStation 5s, after people have bought the PlayStation 5, to see what kind of update, because here's the thing, they use a...
Don't they?
They have coolers that you can affect how when they cool and all. They're programmable coolers. There are three of them in the PlayStation 5, and it's not something new. Actually, televisions do it. You have smart TVs that do it, right? And it's bugging a lot of people because what they're essentially saying is that they don't know how hot it's going to run, and they're going to release patches if they find that it runs hotter than it should on certain games.
And can't they test this before releasing? That sounds like something they should be testing before releasing.
Yeah, that's
the
exact question what people are asking there, Scott. Why didn't you test this on your own before you have people paying for the thing?
Yeah.
Because not everybody has a stable connection, you know, and these things often fail anyway, I mean, in terms of updating the thing. And you can't have telling people bought your machine saying, oh, we're going to patch it, don't worry, if it gets too hot we're going to find a way to make it cooler when you upload a patch to your system.
I think that's a hardware issue.
Well, here's the thing, like I said, they have three fans in it that are programmable and that are controlled by the OS, so. And they suck up power, you know. The harder these fans work, you know, the more power it's going to take from it, which is why they just don't have all the fans up at max and just blasting it with cool air. That's not what they intended. That's not what they could do, because then it would suck up too much power, you know. So it's just a company that didn't really think that far ahead when making their console. It's just baffling.
Yeah. And
the way the Xbox Series X works, this is funny, the sides are going to be sucking up air through the bottom and blasting it up the top. Which is why it's that weird, you notice it has a weird tower configuration. I mean, you can put it on its side, by the way. You don't have to have it as a tower, right? But it has that weird obelisk thing, so what happens is you have these air coming in through the sides and it's just blowing it up the top. The PlayStation 5, the air comes in through the sides and goes out I don't know which port. It's one of the ports. But it also explains why the PlayStation 5 is so huge. Because I think Scott noted that you really shouldn't be soldering your fans.
No. A hard drive, yeah, because you can't replace them, and you have to replace the whole thing, which I'm sure, I guess, Sony wants. I guess that's what they want. I don't know why else they did this.
So, it's also built to... It's also built to accept M2 solid-state drives.
Yeah, and you've seen a lot of these videos coming out now from people who have the Xbox Series X and have the I don't know if people have the PlayStation 5, but they have the specs, and they're giving all these advice of what drives to buy for these machines, you know, with solid-state drives to input, because I believe the both of them have the same port for solid-state, an external drive. It doesn't have to be solid-state, but it's advisable that it's a solid-state. So what were you going to say there, TJ?
I would agree that it's weird that they actually, like, attached the hard drive to the motherboard. Because, yeah, like, what if it fries? Then what?
Fortunately, you know, I think cloud saves have become a standard. So at least there's that. So at least you're not going to lose all your saves if the hard drive fries. But it's still annoying, to say the least, if your hard drive fries. Which makes me wonder if people are going to mod their Xbox Series X's by putting in cracking it open, putting in their own drives, since it's not attached to the motherboard.
I don't know. I guess they can. I mean, people, of course, have certainly.
If you have a port, then why would you? I don't know. But yeah, solid state is here to stay. We saw the 3 terabyte. What is it? 3 terabyte solid state drive for $170. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we have to note that the solid-state drive for the Xbox Series X, I can't speak for the PlayStation 5, I don't know, it's kind of proprietary. You need a very specific type of drive to have optimal functionality with the Xbox Series X, which is why they have their, $175 1 terabyte drive, which is basically, it looks like a thumb drive. You just stick it in the side. But still, $175. That's, you're paying $400 for the console, and you're paying almost half of that to double its storage. That's just no. I'm glad it's not like Apple, who would just force you to use only one drive, not have any third party. So it'll be interesting. It's a new generation, the 9th generation, yay. TJ actually knows he's getting a PlayStation 5, so he can review it for us.
Yeah.
Since he won a raffle.
Oh, yeah, the raffle.
The raffle wasn't so bad after all, now was it?
Yeah, in the end, it worked out real well for me, like way more stress-free than a lot of people.
Basically because Sony completely fucked up the pre-orders. And Microsoft fucked it up slightly less. Because with Sony, no one knew when no one knew when it was going to start, you know, the pre-orders. They gave no clue of what time it was going to be. Unfortunately, Microsoft did give a time, and that was even worse in a way. Because people just sucked them up immediately. It's like, oh, sucks to be you. Then they had a second batch. Oh, sucks to be you.
Yeah, I really, really hope that this is, you know, that would be funny if, as much as I boast about never having a system that, like, has the problems that other people have, this is the one that fries.
Yeah, there'll be some new, like, Ring of Death thing for PlayStation 5, I'm sure, and horror stories of the drives dying and having to replace the whole thing because it overheated.
Here's the thing. When you have massive hardware failures like, say, the first iPod, the Commodore 64, the Xbox 360, it's usually because those things were made with baling wire and scotch tape because they had to be. With the Xbox, what happened with that was that the contract for the motherboard that was in the Xbox was going to expire in a hard date, and Microsoft just said, oh, screw it, fuck, we have to make a new console right away. So they had to jury-rig consoles and send them out as fast as possible, because they weren't going to be able to renew the contract. So that's why all those Xbox 360s, a lot of them were defective. Anyways, you were going to say there, TJ?
One of the things that they're doing with this is, this was reported pretty recently, they're going to be like, I guess they're going to be monitoring data on people's PS5s when they're out in the wild,
yeah,
and producing firmware updates that will adjust the fan input,
yeah,
based on the feedback that they get to try to, I guess in a way, sort of push updates that remotely, like, try to ensure the system's integrity.
But TJ, that's what I was talking about the entire time. The point is that sucks. You know, that sucks. You should have done this beforehand. And oh, by the way, it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's one of the first times I've ever heard of this.
Well, they do it with TVs. They do it with smart TVs. I think LG did it, which, by the way, got them in trouble.
Yeah.
So we're gonna see. You know, I'm hoping we don't hear horror stories 6 months from now, because the PS5 is the hottest running of the consoles from tests that people have been doing on them. You know, 65 degrees Celsius, which may sound high, but like I said last week, usually things don't get bad until you get to 90 degrees Celsius. Anybody who owns a PC will tell you this. When it's running at 65, that's hot, but not, oh my God, it's not, oh my God, hot yet, you know. So a lot of it is going to depend on the cooling.
I mean, like, if you think about it, there's like, I would say that about 70% of that system is the fan sitting at the top and the heat sink sitting at the bottom.
Yeah, that thing is huge.
That heat sink is enormous.
I know. That's just that. But I mean, not just the heat sink, but the console itself is huge. You have this mm-hmm. guy just holding it against it. It's like big as his torso.
The heat sink by itself is probably about the size of a docked Nintendo Switch.
Jeez.
Sony, what are you doing with these machines?
I don't know.
Can you tell that Microsoft has experience with PCs and Sony doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Sony, their answer to having backwards compatibility was just the Emotion Engine. The Emotion Engine was just basically a PS2 stuck in the middle of the PS3. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, Scott. Because I know this news probably interests you the most.
Okay, the Phasmophobia one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Phasmophobia updates will make ghosts smarter and less predictable. This is from PC Gamer. With the spooky season upon us, the Phasmophobia managed to seduce a lot of would-be ghost hunters and become a Steam top seller. It's still in early access, though, which means Kinetic Games still has time to jam in some more horror. A recent post in Phasmophobia subreddit outlined some of the latest changes to the game, as well as pointing interesting players towards a public Trello board where in-progress updates are logged. A quick skim through the various lists of work-in-progress, to-do, and nice-to-have features shows that there's a lot going on with this game, especially when you factor in the developer Kinetic Games is reportedly a one-person operation.
Yeah, so let's we have Lucas Pope, who did Papers, Please and The Return of the Obra Dinn.
Then we this is Lucas Pope's work?
No. Then we have the guy who did Stardew Valley, and we have Jonathan Blow, and we have, oh God, what's the name of the guy who did Fez?
There's one more for, Phil Fish.
Phil Fish, and now we have this guy.
There was one that did Dust, and he was also a one-man team for that. That was another game. But,
there's another single person developer studio.
Wow, it's really impressive what one person can do then.
With a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. As things currently stand, ghosts will generally stick close to the room they have chosen to be their base of operations. Combined with a powerful thermometer tool that allows you to easily identify the ghost's favorite hangout, this knowledge is pretty powerful for tipping the odds in your investigation team's favor. Listed among the in-progress updates on Trello, however, is a feature that will increase the ghost's chances of wandering into a different room, as well as giving them a preference for returning to the last location where they spotted a player, a truly terrifying prospect, as it would make catching equipment in nearby safe rooms much less well safe. There's even a plan currently just in the idea phase, mercifully, to nerf that helpful thermometer. If you fancy testing your own ghost hunting skills against Phasmophobia, Array of Spirit, Shades, Wraiths, and more, you can pick up early access version on Steam for £11 or $14. This is a very interesting game. And I remember seeing some YouTubers play it, and you could see the ghost. A lot of times it was a child ghost running up and down a staircase, coming out of the basement. And it's very creepy the way they move around. It's a creepy game. And, you know, just so that these sound like good features to make it more challenging.
Like I said last week, it's just Luigi's Mansion.
It's nothing like Luigi's Mansion at all.
Have you? I know I asked this last week, but did you finish Luigi's Mansion 3 yet?
Not yet, but like I said, I got all the way to what I think is the second to the last boss. It's the hotel manager ghost. I still have to fight King Boo as well, so I'm sure that there's at least two fights, at least. But the game, no, this game is nothing like it. You're not sucking up ghosts into your little thing and looking at a comical Italian plumber go, whoa! No, this is you running around screaming your head off and suddenly ghostly rotted hands come in front of your face and snap your neck and so now you're on the other side trying to talk to your team.
It's Luigi's Mansion meets Left 4 Dead meets Dark Souls.
I don't know.
Which would be not... You're just trolling me. I just know it. You're trolling me.
TJ, go ahead.
Yeah, TJ.
I've seen this game a lot, and I really want to play it. But I was going to say that Luigi's Mansion is an action RPG. It's basically the Dark Souls of kids' ghost games.
this game interests me a lot more than Among Us, because Among Us is...
the best
Among
game
Us
ever.
Is never going to really work.
Never going to work.
It's working,
work
dude. I don't know what to tell you. It's even in the world of politics.
It's bad. It's yeah, I know. That's one item we're not talking about is a AOC. Ocasio Cortez actually is promoting it and other games, you know, on the stream. But Among Us isn't really that good.
Isn't it though?
No.
Isn't it, Jonah?
Jonah, are you standing there telling people not to have fun?
Okay, I don't know who's having fun with it, but as someone who's played, I already talked about the game, the board game I was talking about before, which was Nemesis. Mm-hmm. I have played a ton of these kind of games. I've played, you know, like Battlestar Galactica, the board game, is miles better. Than Among Us. Because the best parts of that game is that you don't know if you're a bad guy or not until the reveal phase. You may be a bad guy, but if you're human, you don't know if you're human or Cylon. You're not sure that you're 100% human until that you reveal your other card. Oh, you were a Cylon the entire time.
The whole point of this game and Mafia and Town of Salem and Werewolf is the people's interaction with each other. And Among Us does exactly that, giving
does
a platform.
None of that. You have one
it does
time,
exactly
you,
that.
It does.
Oh
one time
God.
That you sit down and discuss stuff. That's it. It is
no,
not.
No. You sit down
you're,
multiple.
You're walking
down,
around doing
it's
tasks.
It's baby's
which,
first.
Nah,
game.
That's not true at all.
It's baby's first trader game.
I sat down to this game with a bunch of friends recently, and like it is exactly as fun as the thing board game.
Nah,
for all the same reasons.
Nah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's,
like,
it's badly paced.
No, it's perfectly paced. The pace is controlled
I'm glad you
by
like the game. It's not going to last long.
It will last long.
Considering as this came out in 2018 and it's blowing up now, I think it's going to do just fine. It's
hipster points right now.
Hipster.
It's a hipster game. It's like, oh,
that's
I'm playing
not even
this. It's hipster.
True.
No. Fall Guys is going to last longer than that game.
Fall Guys is also going to last.
I don't think
Fall Guys
is going to last all that long. It's not going to survive for another year and a half. But I'm giving it a year and a half.
Okay,
until the next big thing happens and it's forgotten.
Here's why Among Us is great and you're wrong.
Okay.
The entire pace of the game is controlled by a crew completing their tasks, or B, a killer most of the pace of the game is controlled by the crew completing their tasks and incidentally discovering murder along the way.
It doesn't need to be an expensive game. I don't know why it's
an expensive game. I'm just saying it's a $5 game, and that's how much it's worth.
That's all it has to be. It doesn't have to be a big fancy game. Like, you could play StarCraft 2 and play Mafia in there, and you know, as a mod, and
get Town of Salem has its flaws, but it's still more interesting. Miles more interesting.
Actually,
than,
I think this is more interesting because you actually get to see the people walking around doing the task, and you say, "Oh, I saw that person over there. I saw green over there, and oh, blue just vented right in front of me, and all this other stuff."
You have to play Town of Salem because some of the things that
I did play Town of Salem, and I played Mafia, and you have to type things out.
Among Us have a jester?
It doesn't need a jester.
No, I'm asking because the jester is trying to get himself killed.
Yeah, I know. We don't need that.
It does, like in that. If they choose to add that down the line, that's great and all. But like,
does it have a plague bearer? Does it have a at least it has a serial killer.
That's really all it needs because, like I said, the pace is controlled by everybody moving around and their discovery.
You can say what you like. It still bores the hell out of me.
Well, that's fine.
It bores you, but it's entertaining other people.
Let's get back to Phasmophobia and how much it's like Luigi's Mansion.
So this is another game that's basically, you know, you're in this horror situation, and the players are trying to contact a ghost.
Here's the thing about Left 4 Dead. It's a horror game, but it's not scary, and it seems to me like Phasmophobia has an infinite amount more of being scary because it is basically four-player amnesia. I mean, it could become four-player amnesia.
That's kind of what I see when I look at it too. It does have that vibe of amnesia where it's like everybody is kind of like the whole point of it is investigation and like passive exploration.
And what's behind that dark corner?
And you have little control over like the threatening entity.
I mean, well, TJ, I might get it on early access just to see what it's like, because I will say, you know, co-op games and investigative, mysterious games are up my alley, so I'll probably check it out at some point.
It looks fun. It looks like it's a lot of fun with other people. I think the only issue I have with it is that it's probably not as fun as Among Us.
Well, until they have a traitor in Phasmophobia, I was a ghost the entire time. Actually, you know, you could probably do that in just being only able to give misleading information, you know? I mean, but here's the thing. Just do one thing right before you start, you know, before you start going off in other directions. You know, just make it's still in early access. Make Phasmophobia the best it can be on its own before you start introducing traitor mechanics. Which I could actually see in a game like that. Someone who has to help the ghosts.
Yeah. Who knows? Like you said, it's in early access right now, so things can change on the way to a 1.0 launch date. They've got their core mechanics in place, and the core mechanics look pretty good.
Hey, Scott, let me ask you a question. How much does it feel like an early access game?
It does feel like early access because I think there's some graphics glitches.
Forget about graphic glitches. We're talking about gameplay now.
Gameplay seems pretty good because, again, it's the people walking around and you're, I guess, trying to find the ghost and not get in its way so it doesn't kill you.
Before you, what is the failure mechanic then?
You getting killed.
How? Does it?
The ghost finds you, and you piss it off.
So the ghost is trying to find you too.
Yeah, the ghost is trying to kill you.
Right.
And
but it doesn't know where you are. You're trying to find
evidence of it. You're trying to get the evidence of it, so that way you can bring it back, and I guess you get paid for the evidence and for getting these achievements, and then you get better equipment.
Do you have to set it up in order to capture it?
So if the ghost gives you a BJ in the library, you're done.
No, actually, that was in a mansion, just so you know, TJ. That was in the mansion, not the library.
In Ghostbusters? Wasn't it? Didn't he get a beach in the library?
He was dreaming. He was dreaming himself.
Oh, he was sleeping in bed. I thought
he was. He was in a bed, but it was in a. It wasn't in the library. It was in a castle, sort of. He was in a castle, and by the way, that was actually. By the way, the nickname for that ghost by the crew was Succubus.
Oh yeah.
But anyways, no, it was actually not a dream. It was actually an actual investigation that they cut in Ghostbusters and just included it as a dream. But yeah, they were investigating a manor, not a library. It was a manor. So, anyways, so let me ask you a question.
I do appreciate the hot Ghostbusters trivia.
So, are the ghosts? The ghosts don't know where you are, right?
Right, they don't. And I guess they're going to program it to that way they
No,
hunt
but I'm
you.
Saying the mechanic is that you're looking for the ghosts and the ghosts are looking for you.
Yeah, but like they're calling out the ghost's name, and I don't know if that actually works or not in the programming, but they call out the ghost's name, they ask the ghost questions. Huh. I think sometimes they can hear sound effects or responses, banging noises, and then they start getting all freaked out. Because they'll see the ghost and they have to get pictures and readings. They have black lights.
So this is everything that Ghost Hunters wishes it was.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, all
this
those
is what
ghost
Hunters,
Hunters,
this
wish...
is what Ghost Hunters wishes it was.
Yeah, because they just you hear that sound? It's like, no, I didn't hear anything. And here it's actually, yeah, you can hear that sound. You can hear a whisper of saying something. And
They have to have DLC in which you play Zach Bagans.
Or yeah, there's so many Ghost Hunters. I don't know what their names are.
Zach Bagans is the most famous of them.
Okay.
But here's the funniest part. He has this accent which makes him sound like Yo Adrian. You gotta hear. You can't take him seriously when he talks.
Is this the guy that didn't believe in ghosts and then he gets an experience?
No, it's something else.
I don't know.
He actually is a big fan of what's his name? Barnum, you know, and he has his own thing in Las Vegas right now, in which it's actually pretty interesting. You know, like he has the pots that what's his name again? The cannibal from Indiana. You remember him? Jeffrey Dahmer. He has the pots that Jeffrey Dahmer used to cook people in. He has all these real artifacts from these serial killers and other things. And when you enter, it's sort of like being a charlatan sort of thing, but he rides the line. He acts like a charlatan and then professes not to be a charlatan at the same time. So make of it as you will. Anyways, we're spending too much time on this. Let's move on to the next item. 2K under fire for adding unskippable in-game ads to full price NBA 2K21 a month after release. And this comes from Eurogamer. 2K has come under fire from NBA 2K21 players for adding unskippable in-game adverts. As reported by Steve Ivor, 2K recently added unskippable adverts into the full price. Oh, God, they're just repeating the same information. A video shows an advert for Oculus Quest 2 attached to a pre-game video called My Team Season 2, Episode 7. The advert runs as the match is loading. It's worth noting that you cannot edit your team lineup until the advert has run its course. And here's the thing. Those loading screens, normally you could, you know, while the game was loading, you could edit your lineup. According to Steve Ivor, the experience is the same on PC, even when running from an SSD, meaning... Even if you have a solid-state drive and it's already loaded, no, that ad's got to run. Sorry, you got to sit there and wait. The adverts hit the game just over a month after launch on PC and current-gen consoles and ahead of the planned PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X release. 2K pulled a similar trick with last year's game, a move that was similarly criticized by fans. And it rekindles memories of EA's insertion into in-game adverts into UFC 4, a move that the publisher eventually reversed following a backlash. 2K has a bad reputation for monetization of its NBA franchise. In August 2019, European video game age rating organization PEGI said that it was, quote-unquote, very aware NBA 2K20 got too close for comfort to teaching players gambling after received a complaint about the controversial casino trailer. And I just want to tell people who are complaining about this, serves you right. Serves you right for buying the game. Did you learn nothing from 2K20 and 2K19? This is why I haven't bought it. I know that they're going to do this stuff, and yet you still keep buying this game? Really? Because guess what? Every time you buy it, they say, ka-ching. They don't care. You bought the game. You bought the game. They have your money. Now they want to make more money. The only way to stop it is not to buy the game. Did you really have to buy NBA 2K21? You have NBA 2K20. Yeah, they shut off the online component of 2K20, but that's also your own damn fault because you keep on spending money every time you get a new game. So, I know you have something to say, TJ. Go ahead.
What a trash decision. Like, I can't believe they did that.
You can't believe they did that? They did that already. I would say it's a shocker if they didn't do it.
When did they do it before?
2K20.
Did they?
Yeah.
So
it wasn't as blatant, but it was there.
See, and that opens up an interesting discussion. Is this what games are going to be like in the future, where like people buy advertisements in games, and despite the fact that there's no loading, like, you know, the PS5 and Xbox Series X have touted there's going to be very little loading. Are we just going to be sitting around watching ads while during the fake loading screen, that are like unskippable, and we just have to sit there and watch it before we can get to the next part of the game?
Here's how you fix that. Don't buy the game. No one's forcing you to buy this game. You know, I have lived happily without playing a 2K game since 2K15. I don't need it in my life. I don't. And, you know, it's just that a lot of kiddywinks just need to have it now. It's just like Madden, you know, spend $200 on Ultimate Team, then complain when that money you spent on Ultimate Team is useless with the new game that comes out a year later. It's like, I don't care. I'll just rent 2K21, or maybe it'll come on Game Pass again, but I'm not going to spend a single penny on the game. Not one thin dime.
Yep. And it sounds like you're making the right call, because this is trash.
Yeah, I just hope the ads don't show up in Civilization games. That would be very frustrating.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. I don't mind ads in the game if it's like, it's on the court, you know, like it's, or if it's like during the game, during the pre and post game show, it's like State Farm presents, you know, the news. That's fine. That's, you actually have that in television. It's real. That's reality. You know, having in-game ads in the stadium, I don't mind at all. That just adds to the realism because you have that advertising in the thing. If you want to have advertising, just have it during the game, just like everybody else. You know, you have a little bug for Coca-Cola, and you have someone saying Coke is it, you know, and back to the game. You know, not a, you know, like a commercial, but I just mean, you know, whenever you have you're watching a sports game, you see a little bug in the thing which says, you know, Coca-Cola, that sort of thing, or have it on the side, you know. If you were playing a football game, right, and you see banners for Coke and Intel and State Farm, I'm not going to give a shit. You have that in real life, you know. It's when you prevent me from playing to advertise to me. That's when I get salty. It's like, we're going to stop the game now. We're going to advertise State Farm Insurance for you. Fuck you. I'm not going to deal with that. I have this wonderful solid-state drive, and I could load the game in 25 seconds if you'd let me. But you're not going to let me now, are you? I wonder what Sony and Microsoft think of this, because they are really pimping the fact that you have a solid-state drive and that games load really fast now. And here comes a third-party developer who says, well, I don't care about your solid-state drive. They're going to make their players sit for a minute now. Minute, 2 minutes watching our ad.
It's so incredibly dumb. It makes me nervous about, like, if people begin to accept that as common practice.
You know, people are surprisingly don't accept things as common practice. Let me give you remember when you needed, whenever you bought a game, you had an online code with it so that you could play online because they were fighting used games. And if you bought the game used, you had to buy to spend $10 to be able to play online. That didn't last now, did it? That's a far-off memory of a mistake. You know? We don't see really malicious DRM anymore now, do we? I mean, the most malicious DRM we have now is just people having their own stores.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, because, like, Denuvo is still kicking around.
Yeah, you know, but it's not widespread. It's not like everybody's using it. I think the only people who use it is Ubisoft, maybe because they have a contract with them. I don't know. I will say that when I was trying to play Anno, it's like, oh, fuck, I have to register and install from Uplay, even though I got it from Epic Games Store. Are you serious?
Yeah, if it's Ubi's game, then yeah.
Same thing with Star Wars Squadrons, but that was less. It was just, you just have to install it using Origin, and then you don't have to touch Origin anymore. You just have to do it through Origin, and after you've done that, you don't have to worry about it.
That happened with Fallen Order as well, as you're playing it through Origin as well.
You're not playing it through Origin, you're installing it through Origin.
Right.
But you can skip Origin and Epic just by playing the game straight from the root directory if you want to. I mean, that's how I had to get around a nasty bug with Dragon Age Inquisition. I had to, but the crux of the matter is that you just have to say, I'm going to wait 6 months before I buy a game. Don't pre-order it. Don't buy it. You know, it's so easy, you know. Here's the thing. You have control over your own wallet. I hate it when people complain about having to spend money on DLC and games. It's like, dude, you don't have to. Why do you have to? Peer pressure? You know?
Yeah.
If you don't like what they're doing, don't help them out.
Yeah. Vote with your wallet.
Here's the thing, you know, NBA 2K21 has a 0.9 user score rating, at least for the PlayStation 4 version. My answer is, but you still bought the game now, didn't you?
Yeah, and like, and people will continue to buy it. They will continue to buy it, and they'll continue spending money on Ultimate Team, and they'll continue playing their.
You need to complain, and I'm saying, you know what? Fuck you. I have the right to complain because you're ruining it for me. And it makes me wonder what's going to happen with MLB The Show for platforms other than the Sony PlayStation. I have a feeling that MLB is telling them, you better do this right. No gimping, no nothing. It has to be the best possible version. And, you know, Microsoft's doing right by Sony in that, you know, they didn't gimp Cuphead. Cuphead is the best version. What's it called? It has everything included with it. Isn't it a special version? Isn't Cuphead a special version that was released on PlayStation 4, something like the Something Edition or something like that? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you have Ori on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played Ori on the Switch there, Scott?
No, I have it just on Steam. Okay. But it probably played well on the Switch.
Oh, but he did play it. Okay. I'm just wondering. You're about to say, TJ?
They released a super good collector's edition of the Ori games on Switch.
Yeah.
I really want it, but it was like $150 or something.
Was that the physical copy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that came with what? An LP and some books and...
Damn.
It was the soundtrack, a really, 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 really nice box, and I forget. There was a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, I feel like getting more of those Metroidvania games.
It's one of those things. Yeah, it was released by IM 8-Bit. Yeah, they do a lot of that stuff. They did the same thing with The Binding of Isaac. Wow, that is a nice box.
Yeah, right?
It's a glowy, it's black with glow, with, looks like it's glow in the dark, actually.
Uh-huh.
It has the field guide, it has a sketchbook, it has a card set, a hard enamel glow in the dark pin. Yeah, it is glow in the dark. The box is glow in the dark.
That is nice.
Stained glass style. Cool. Yeah. Wow, that is pretty. So I'm just going to copy the link here and send it on the chat, because I'm pretty sure Scott would love to see that.
But yes. Anyway.
But yeah, it is. Ooh. It is pretty. It has two Switch games in it. Oh, wait. Is it one of them? Oh, one of them is the soundtrack. Okay. I thought it had the... Because there are some games that released a vinyl soundtrack album.
Oh, yeah. There's a vinyl for Sea of Stars and a vinyl for Ayudin.
Oh, it came in both. I didn't even know the blind. Okay, so both Oris have been released on the Switch. Okay.
Yes, so you got Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps in this collection.
Yeah, check it out, Scott. Anyway. Nothing's going to change unless people just decide, I'm not going to buy it. I mean, the review scores have been lowering too, but I don't think that's going to be any infinites either. So long as they're getting their money, they're getting their money. So long as people are buying VC, they don't care. That's why I released it on Game Pass, because they figured, you know what, people are going to spend VC on it. I don't know. At least the core gameplay, the very core gameplay is still good, which is something you cannot say about Madden. Madden is just bad all the way through.
Oh my god, Madden is, like, so buggy. And they don't even fix it. They released patch notes soon after, and it didn't even fix the biggest problems of the game. It was mostly about the Ultimate Team.
Well, that's the important part of the game.
Yeah, right? Oh my god.
Have you seen the Ori Collector's Edition yet there, Scott?
Yes, it's beautiful. Yeah. I love this the artwork on the soundtrack and the card. It looks like, it kind of reminds me of Myst, how the it just looks beautiful.
And that's glow-in-the-dark, too, which is kind of sweet.
That is nice, yes. That's a very nice collector's edition.
And they also have it for the Xbox One and PC, too. That's cool.
Yep, I see that. So if you want a different version, get it for the one that you want. I'd probably get it for the PC myself.
Yeah. The thing is that for Xbox, if you have Game Pass, then you're just getting the physical copies and you don't really care about the games. You can just hand those games. Well, actually, no, the games look like the regular copies, so who cares? Anyways. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback. Leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And you can find Scott playing Luigi's Mansion, a.k.a. Phasmagoria. Actually, that's wrong. Phasmagoria was Roberta Williams' thing. I've never played it. I just remember at the time it was really state-of-the-art because they had a digitized... what was her name? What was the name of the character's name? I forgot her name.
Oh, I don't think that.
But anyway, they digitized... You know, sort of like playing Mortal Kombat, except an adventure game. They did that sort of scanning.
Sierra was very good with the FMV video concept on the video games, and I thought they did a good job. But I guess others didn't, and so it was just too few that did a good format with that. But it was I thought it was fun because you get to see acting, and some of it was good, and some of it was very over the top cheesy. But it was just it was a lot of fun.
People still rave about the Gabriel Knight trilogy, which I have yet to.
Oh yeah, I loved that one. That was another good one too. Yeah. That one had really good acting, I think, and really good effects.
Everybody loved that trilogy. Mm-hmm. And because it, from what I understand, I haven't played it, it had a lot to... There's a lot of themes running through it, a lot of heavy themes running through it, so... I'll be trying Luigi's Phasmophobia at some point.
Okay. Just get some friends to play with.
Friends? What are those?
I don't know.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.